Hey everybody, this is Brett. It is the evening of August 5th, and today was the 12th and final anniversary of the School Sucks podcast. This is not the last episode of the podcast. It is also very worth mentioning the School Sucks project is not going anywhere. However you're involved with us right now, I am going to ask you to stay involved. Stay subscribed to this feed. Stay involved in our community wherever you find it. AV Club, Patreon, Locals. There's much more to do and plenty to explore with what is going to be happening next, but I'm going to be saving that discussion for the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest that's coming up August 12th through the 16th, mplfest.org. So what you're going to hear is a Discomfort Zone live stream that we recorded this afternoon. The Discomfort Zone is usually a supporter-only show, but I wanted something to commemorate this day, so I'm releasing it as a podcast. One of the things that we do in the Discomfort Zone that runs kind of like a mastermind, weekly wins. This segment of the show went on for almost a half an hour, so I moved it to the end just so what you're going to be spending your time listening to up front is kind of what is advertised in the title. That's the discussion that we have primarily, and all that surrounds it, of course. I was very thankful that young Alex Bell, could join this conversation. Alex is somebody who has been involved with School Sucks almost right since the beginning when he was 16 years old. He was the person that I was looking for with this message all those years ago, and he's one of my closest friends today. So it was very special having him included in the conversation. And of course, thank you to Alex, Carrie, Gretchen, and many other people that I don't even know who they are. Working on the School Sucks yearbook for the School Sucks graduation coming up next week. So that's it for today. We will be podcasting until the end of the month of August. There are many things still lined up, so don't go anywhere. Thanks.
I wonder if you feel like there's some discomfort around how School Sucks is ending. My personal story on this from recent times.
I feel like we're projecting discomfort on the bread.
We might really be. That's why I'm asking the question.
No, I'm ready to receive it. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of thoughts. There are a lot of emotions about this, and I've really tried to sort through all of these things and even the bigger picture that these things fit inside of. So I'm open to anything. Go for it.
Yeah. So my question is and here's why I'm doing this, Andrew, is because the initial, you would have just thought, well, something's ending and that's scary. He said he's not really discomforted with. So now let's try to dig deeper and ask some different questions.
All right. Yes.
Happy talk, keep talking, happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you gonna have a dream come true? Yeah! Happy talking, talking, happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you gonna have a dream come true?
All right. In 5, 4, 3...
Welcome back to The Discomfort Zone. Season what?
Season 4, episode 6 or 7 or 8.
Happy anniversary! We say happy anniversary to start every show now.
Happy anniversary.
Anniversary.
Today is the glorious 12th anniversary, 12th and final anniversary of School Sucks podcast. I don't know how many people actually know that. I guess most people do at this point.
They do now, yes. After listening to you just state that fact.
I think of the many celebrations we've done through the years. We did a big 6th anniversary. Remember?
What is that, the Dawn of Freedom?
No. We did a marathon live show. It was me, Osborne, Dale, my webmaster, Tony, and it was called the Sextacular. Sex for 6.
Mm-hmm.
We did a big 250th. Not years, but episode. Show me, Osborne, and Brian from New Hampshire. Guy you don't know, older guy.
Never met Brian.
I love that guy. He's been on the show.
I love
a couple
that
times.
Guy too. Oh man, I got to get in touch with that guy. So
I think he actually appeared. So spoiler alert, there's a yearbook being put together for School Sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I put together a guest list. I found a way to rip every single episode, title, description, link into a spreadsheet.
Yes.
Ever done of School Sucks Project. And I believe Brian showed up as friend of the show, Brian, which was not enough information for us to go.
Oh, I could have figured that out.
To reach out to him. So unless he saw some other message some other way, unfortunately, Brian's entry did not make it.
So this was a really amazing thing you guys did, and I really appreciate it so much. You tracked down. I thought you did a lot.
I did nothing.
Oh.
He reached out to a couple people.
Yeah.
Ah. He did enough to get his name in the honorable mention category for helping out. Means.
Are there superlatives?
There are a few, yes. Yep.
Wow!
Yeah.
I am so excited to receive this thing at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. I received it.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
It's part of a graduation ceremony. We're figuring out if we can record it. So since we've already revealed all these prizes to you, if you have a way to contact Joe Motard or you have some GoPro Hero 3.
Whoa.
Or something like that.
I'm in the chat here, and Carrie, one of the yearbook staff,
yeah,
is in the chat as well. And she typed a message. I read it. I forgot what it said. And now it says, message deleted by the Google moderator team.
Wow.
And I'm in the live chat, not the top chat.
What?
Carrie, what did you say?
Carrie, say it again.
Yeah.
In Telegram.
Let's do experiments. Fuck the 12th anniversary of School Sucks. I mean, let's really get to the bottom of this big tech censorship here.
Carrie, send it to us in an SMS message. Let's see if the government flags it.
Well, Alex, I find you to be one of the most important people in School Sucks.
Oh, so, well, thank you.
I'm really glad you could join us for this discomfort zone. And I want to say right at the outset of the show, 12th and final anniversary, the show will end at the end of this month. The podcast will end and everything else about it will continue. The website will obviously stay up. The podcast feed, which is expensive to maintain, mm-hmm. will stay up.
The Facebook group will stay open?
I don't know about that yet. I mean, we've got this private university community. I will finally be able to put more of my focus in there, at least through like September and October as I transition into something new. I'm going to want the help of people in there, bouncing ideas off of them. I'm going to announce what I'll be doing next at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. So I can't talk about that yet here, but you guys already know what it will be. I'm still working on it, trying to figure out how to make it just right.
It's in formation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So things will continue. The discomfort zone will continue. Andrew, do you want to like commit to doing the discomfort zone twice a month?
Then haven't we always done this?
Yes, but how can we commit to doing it?
I don't know, but I always prompt the discomfort zone.
You do. So I need to prompt the discomfort zone.
Before we do that, real quick.
We each need to do it once a month.
And I'm within 5 minutes of your house every day of my life, pretty much.
And after August, I will have a studio with multiple mics and all that because I'm going to New Hampshire to get that. So,
And I will tease this. It's a strong possibility that I may live 30 minutes closer to your house in the very near future.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
On the hill there?
No.
Oh.
That would be a lot closer than 30 minutes closer.
Well, since things are getting personal, before we go any further with this stuff, and we can go further with this stuff, why don't we, since this is an episode of The Discomfort Zone, talk about how we punched the world.
Not yet.
Why?
Because I got more discomfort. The Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, we are committed to doing a live discomfort zone. That's very discomfortable.
Why?
Because I don't do things live.
It's live right now.
Yeah, but there's not We're a person here. In front of me. So I don't know. I have some kind of comfort by, I don't care how many people are listening live.
It's the bodies in the room. It's the cheering when you get the woo and stuff like that in the background.
I hope no one cheers.
Well, I'm going to cheer now.
I hope no one
cheers. I'm going to cheer and clap just because you said that.
So there's that. But then there's also, I feel like we're going to be on a stage, like elevated above people. I got to get the podium. I'm bringing the podium.
There you go. You can sit behind the podium.
I'm going to stand behind the podium.
Oh, the whole time?
Yeah, sure.
Have two drinks and you'll feel great.
No, that's the thing. I thought about this. Okay. So I just want to talk this out. First of all, I don't know what we're going to talk about.
I have an idea. Would you like to hear what it is?
Okay.
All right. We will plan to record for 2 hours, and we will do. We'll solve your problem, like speed problem
solving.
Okay,
that's the only way I'm going to feel comfortable is taking some stranger, they express their problem, and I come up with the fastest solution imaginable, and it's probably the best.
Okay. Yes, that's how I'd like to do it.
Okay, so that's doable. But it's still not going to get me over some weird stage fright thing. And I can speak to crowds. I feel better in person in front of a crowd than I do on a Zoom call. None of this makes any sense.
Well, yeah, public speaking can be kind of intimidating. And here's the thing. I'll tell a story about giving a speech that I was very, very concerned about on the Tom Woods cruise.
Yeah, Contra Cruiseman.
Right. So I am a last minute.
That would have been a better name for it.
I'm a last minute replacement for who? Dave Smith. Who everybody loves and nobody knows who I am. Because they're all Contra Krugmaners, right? So there are, like, the first night at dinner, they put a featured person at a table with a bunch of cruise guests, right? And everyone's like, so Brett, what do you do? So that's how it starts. And
you're
every,
like, I fucking keynote speak here. That's what I do.
Right. So every night, you're eating dinner with a different group of Contra Cruisers, you know? And a lot of them don't know who I am. And so I'm like, well, shit. And I'm the replacement for Dave Smith because... they said, Brett's funny. So now I have to be funny, which is a disastrous expectation of a speech.
Yeah.
Because if you go up there and you start with a joke and it doesn't go well, everybody in that room is fucked. You're fucked. You're the one giving the speech. But everybody else is fucked too because now they're uncomfortable watching you be fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And they're angry at you about it, but they're trying to act like they're not, which is only making them more uneasy.
Just the tension becomes palpable. You can cut it with a knife.
See,
very quickly.
Here's the other problem. Shit doesn't go right. I can't just run away.
Right. You're stuck. You're trapped.
We're on a ship in the middle of the ocean, and I got to eat dinner with these people and attend events with these people for the rest of the week.
This is like a luxurious concentration camp that you're trapped in.
Yeah. So all the farts that got breathed in over that week.
Yeah.
As anxiety-inducing as this is for you, it's not making me nervous at all because... I'm looking at it of, oh, Brett has a problem, right? I know the outcome here, but I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, but I can't because it's you. And I'm going, Brett has a problem. How do we solve it? Oh, it's easy. I have confidence in Brett. He'll do great. Just go up and do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no big deal. But if it were me, I would go overboard.
Well, here's what happens. Okay. I go up to Bob Murphy right before.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually say, he like kind of, he's like, how you doing? I go, I'm nervous. He goes, wait till you get up there.
He goes, something I like, could tell by the poop.
Wait till you get up there. So you walk up to the podium, and this happens every time I've given a speech. I had to talk in front of that Liberty Forum, like the biggest Liberty Forum, hundreds and hundreds of people, doing those roasts at Pork Fest, hundreds and hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. Every time you get up there, as soon as you get up there, you're like, this is it. There's nothing I can do. And once you're in the position and you just have to go forward, you're fine.
Yeah.
I think everyone would be better off. Anyone in that position, they would be way better off if they had no idea they had to do that thing. Like if 30 seconds before you had to do it, somebody just said, hey, Brett, follow me.
Mm-hmm.
And they just walked you out on stage. And that's the first inkling you had that you had to speak to a crowd. It would be probably way easier on your mentality because there's no lead up. There's no buildup. There's no fear.
There's definitely a weird middle ground with it where like professionals, like a President Joe Biden type, he's given a speech that he then memorizes and reads off of the teleprompter. It's very scripted.
Does he memorize it?
Well, generally that's the idea.
I think things go way better for him when he goes off the cuff.
There's this real high end of like speech and presentation giving where it's all very rote, very scripted. And then there's a low end where there's some people getting started and they're just, their social anxiety will be so through the roof that if they don't have those rails for themselves, they'll just freeze up and clam up. But there's this giant middle ground where it's like, man, off the cuff, if you are comfortable, if you're experienced enough to know, hey, look, it's nerve wracking. And then you stand up there and you start saying words and it's fine. Then off the cuff ad lib does work pretty well because it does save you all that stress of like, oh no, I'm going to forget to say this part or that part, or you put all this expectation versus no, just go up there, start talking. let it be what it is organically.
Yeah, I'm thinking three good stories.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to do next.
That bullet point list. I think that for the majority of these kinds of speaking in front of people things, like, have those couple of good stories, have your bullet points, A, B, C. Let it be that. Don't try to get too technical, too scripted. It might almost be better to pretend like you're not even going to give a speech.
Yeah.
Have somebody pull you up there 30 seconds before.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is basically the last 12 years of my life. It should be fairly easy to do this. I do also need to use it for the last, very last episode of School Sucks podcast. So that's a little bit of pressure.
Well, I'll tell you a couple things. One, Carrie telegrammed me her message. She said in the YouTube chat that she wrote, "Alex is the bomb.com of the yearbook committee," which means
terrorism. You can't say bomb?
Nope.
I said NSA just to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm. The live stream's taken down. The other thing is, I'll tell you what I told some of the other yearbook committee people, which is like, yeah, it's the last 12 years of your life. Whatever comes to mind to you in the moment to say, like, that's probably going to be the right thing to say.
Yes.
Just to trust it. Your instincts are the most aligned anyone's instincts have ever been as far as what should be said in this closing chapter of the School Sex Project. Like, you don't have to think that hard about it.
Yeah, Brett's going to do great. Brett's going to be fine. We're not worried about Brett. We're worried about me. Who the fuck am I?
That's
just some
point.
Guy up there with Brett.
Yeah, that's even worse. That's like if we had a cruise and we were going to have this famous Dave Smith person on, and then Andrew had to replace him because Andrew's funny.
Who thinks that? That's the problem.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, people know Brett. Brett is the Dave Smith of the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
Wow.
Andrew's just some guy.
Yeah.
We don't quite understand why he's talking.
Right. Exactly.
Andrew's not even the Robbie the Fire.
No.
Midwest Peace.
Well, he doesn't
Liberty
have
Fest.
A nickname. Andrew the driver.
No.
Andrew
no,
the...
We're not forcing a nickname.
So here's how we set it up. First of all, everyone's going to love you. Second, all right. So we set up, right, with microphones and everything, but we face away from the crowd.
Okay, I like that.
And we have a camera videoing you and us where the crowd's behind us, but we never look at them. Then we put the person on the other side of the table so they have to face the crowd.
And it's
so
just
they
the
have
back
to face us and the crowd behind them while they talk about.
That's where the podium comes in.
Their
they
pain
just stand
points.
Behind the podium. They walk up to the podium as if they're giving a testimony.
Yes.
It's unconventional. I like it. And you can even say to the person, like, hey, don't be nervous. Most people will watch this on video and all they will be able to see is the back of your head.
Maybe I would feel more comfortable if we brought everything that's in this studio and set it up there, like including the disheveled, wiry mess on top of the table here, the empty old Forrester bottle, the almost empty old granddad bottle, this funky hat from Nicaragua.
Costa Rica,
all of it. I think I'd feel better then. And if, like, the crowd was over there.
I think that's a great idea if you're willing to put up with Puke's wrath for everything being all put together correctly when you bring it back.
Yeah. Okay. Not worth it.
And then
yeah.
it all comes back with pollen on it.
and mildew.
And Michigan.
Ooh.
The dusts of Michigan.
So, I mean, that should make you feel better, right, Andrew? About doing this?
No. I kind of wish that I didn't know.
We are the people who have the answers, though.
For other people?
Yes.
I don't have the answers for me. And I don't trust anybody else's answers for me.
Yeah, but it's about the other people. We're here to solve your problems. It's kind of like it's great that we're there. So I think it will work out well.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
All right.
Here's another problem to solve in this equation. What do you do when you run out of people who's problems?
Yeah, what if nobody has problems?
That's always a trick. We'll see how many people are there this year, but Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest is just the right size crowd where, like, it's not so big that it's like a lot of people are nervous, but there's plenty of people who'll go up anyway.
You just volunteered yourself for the first problem.
Well, yeah.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
Here's the fucking thing. I didn't want to say this.
Oh, jeez.
But what I'm planning to do,
what my goal
is for this, is to make it the most uncomfortable public event.
Great.
Of the year 2021.
Ever. It's the discomfort zone.
Yeah.
Why should it be comfortable? Why should anybody like be like, haha, this is easy and fun?
I'm uncomfortable.
This is where the growth happens. Everybody needs to be on edge and feel very, very awkward. So now we're going to jump ahead 1.5 hour. Our weekly wins, weekly dick punchings, as we call them on the Discomfort Zone, are finished. And I'm wrapping up talking about having a few successful conversations about other people's curiosities, about where I'm at as far as my standard for informed consent. And we transition into just a broader chat briefly about the capital C crisis. You know, at the very beginning of this whole ordeal, the Discomfort Zone we did was called Don't Do What Everybody Else Is Doing.
Yeah.
Which turned out to maybe be the best advice we've ever given.
Yeah, that's what I decided to do. And I kind of repeat that to myself. And I try to look at what everyone is doing. And I continue to try and do the opposite.
Yeah. Now it's just kind of at this juncture where, as far as defending yourself against this otherizing or tribalizing that's happening within your own family or whoever's own family, you have to make what you're doing look like it's succeeding for you, like you're living a better life because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of a trick, right, where people can just kind of go back to whatever their reinforcement is and continue to believe whatever they want. I think that I was saying to CJ, Professor CJ, he and I recorded this morning, and you know, people are trying to make meaning in a very rapid way right now. And they're going to run to people who've made the same meaning, and they're going to run away from people who've made meaning some different way.
Yeah.
So, well, I even think like making something like that explicit to a person of even, you know, average perspective broadness or intelligence, like that should... Being able to explain things like here's what's going on, I think is helpful. You know, like I can do it with my dad, who's a very naive boomer, but he gets it. You know, I was able to do it with somebody else's older parents. So I just think that's important, because that is inside the sphere of control, and to lose control there, to have relationships that are maintained by what you don't say. They're maintained by hiding things. Like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
And, so, only way that I can have a relationship with these people is to literally have zero discussion about anything.
Yeah, and that's
like, unless the discussion is the the children of my cousin,
mm-hmm.
there's no connecting on anything here. And guess what I don't give a shit about and don't even know the names of?
Children of your cousin.
Exactly.
How many?
I don't know.
Well, more than one.
At least two.
All right, so it's probably... Jasper is the boy.
Sandra.
Do you know how many, like, boys and girls?
It's like a Jason or a Kaysen.
Let's go with Kaysen.
A Dayson.
Kaysen, most likely.
Something like that.
That's
yeah.
the boy.
Kaden, Jaden.
That would be, Jaden would be
Brayden.
The girl. Kaysen and Jaden.
They're all boys. Yeah.
Jaden can be a boy's name, I think.
Sure. So there you go. Solved.
I don't know. But yeah, no, I mean, the more I think about it, yeah, I cannot have any kind of connection with these people because they don't understand. I'm sure you run into this too, both of you guys, because neither of you have a 9-to-5 job. Like, you can't go, yeah, I'm a pharmacist or I'm a bank teller.
Yeah.
That's the only framework they can possibly comprehend. And they see me doing whatever I'm doing, and it just seems like I'm just an asshole. Like, how do you not have time to sit here over a coffee for 6 hours and accomplish nothing? Therefore, you're an asshole. And I grew up with them looking at my father that way. My father's trying to be successful and run businesses and do all these things, which required him to pace around outside smoking cigarettes on the phone.
Yep.
And even though he may have been funding their shitty lifestyle and their vacations and all of that, there was no gratefulness from their part. There was no gratitude. There was just distrust and animosity. And I'm seeing the same thing happen to me to a degree if I try and do anything. So it's better to keep my distance, or I end up just wasting time by sitting on the phone or visiting with or whatever.
Well, I think I can seamlessly shift that into gratitude with, one of the things we're here to talk about today, which is, like, I feel like I've created my own whole world, you know? And those kinds of relationships. And you, I mean, we've all done some version of this, right?
Yeah, I was only highlighting that example because that's the one example that's not a world that I created.
But yeah, so those relationships that I think, and it's not like I don't have a good relationship with my mother or, you know, I can't communicate with people who are outside of that world, as we all do. But it's like those relationships kind of become more marginal, where it's like, all right, I it's easier to accept whether they're employment relationships or family relationships or, you know, other people that have just been in your circle for a long time, because there's so much more. And like everybody that I know, my entire social circle, like all the people who are getting like 98% of my time, aside from my romantic relationship, but succeeding in that was a result of, you know, this whole process too, this whole learning process too. So everything that I have today pretty much came out of what I've done for the last 12 years.
Do you feel like you connect best with people consistently, continually when you're working with that person towards a goal, a mutual goal? Like there's some sort of mile marker or milestone in sight or direction things are going? Or are you at a point where everything is comfortable enough and it's just simply, yeah, connecting with this person is great and there's no objective?
Yeah, I don't think I need an objective to connect with somebody, but I get what you're saying. I think it's helpful. But there, and I kind of, that's interesting. That's kind of tricky because sometimes you can be working with somebody towards a goal and I don't think feel that level of connection.
Well, sure. And yeah. I like, there's plenty of, you know, people that I will connect with and I can talk on the phone for 2 hours with them. There's not a deep connection, but there is a goal and it could be a business relationship, but with the more personal relationships, I feel like, at least for me recently, they're bolstered by having a goal. And I have a much more difficult time if there is no goal. I'm kind of like, what's the point?
I think it...
And that might be not a great place to be. I don't know. I'm not saying it's the way to be. I'm just saying, I don't know. I'm thinking about it now. And I'm thinking about your relationships and a lot of the people you interact with. You're working towards something. You're trying to achieve something together with people.
I think that helps a lot. I think it's like... pretty much any tool, like double-edged sword at a certain point. Because yeah, I'm thinking as I'm like moving out to Denver, I'm thinking about what am I doing? When I first got started with like trying to meet people as an adult, it was all these like business networking event type things. And so, well, what do you do? Doing digital marketing, like framing things in that context. Obviously business is a specific context of why would I talk to you and how can we help each other? Is part of the pretext of conversations there, but it was definitely like, how do you connect with people on describing yourself as the pharmacist or the digital marketer person or whatever? But then also the people I think that you encounter more and get closer to in that context is definitely with like, do we work on some event together or is there some project or is there like a mutual connection that we set up so that somebody can do some business thing. And I don't feel like I have that as strongly right now because I'm kind of in a transition, not just where I'm living, but also, okay, what do I want to be doing 5 years from now? Because I've figured out the thing I wanted to do 5 years ago enough that it kind of just happens. I don't have to put a ton of effort into it. So I think that shared goal, like that definitely helps kind of bind you together in a different way. But I think like with your grandma and wanting to talk about the kids, like there's a level of conversation that maybe is a little more elevated than just like trivial bullshitting. But it's still a similar thing where it's like, we're not talking about a thing that we're trying to solve or a thing we're trying to do. But it is also, it's a kind of conversation that is meandering and does wander into just different realms of thought. And we get to understand each other better without having like this point of focus that we're both trying to like turn into a conversation that leads to action.
I mean, I think there's room for both of these kinds of,
yeah, I think it's all there.
I'm sure there is. It's just, I think you're balancing both sides of that a whole lot better than I am.
Well, my work life and my social life, as I said, they're very intertwined. You know, like The people that I talk to outside of my romantic relationship, it's, you know, like we come here, we do a show. I mean, that's not really my work, but it's definitely a very important outlet. Not this show, but Portman Show. And yeah, I mean, most of the connections that I have every week are work related, or they grew out of some kind of shared goal or shared vision. So yeah, I got, I mean, in my life, there's a lot of overlap, but there's also like people who, you know, I mean, 12 years ago, I met a man who was like, I'll give you money. Now that sounds vague and kind of ominous, because what did this man want to do? But he's like, I like what you're doing. I'll give you money. And we kind of just became friends instead, you know? And I think I was apprehensive at the time. And I'm interested, Andrew, because you had a friend and made him a business partner, right? Or proposed that.
Yeah. We're going to racing cars together this weekend.
Yeah. So I think at the time, I didn't have a vision of like what I could offer or what I was really doing.
Well, I said this a while ago on the Discomfort Zone. You know, there's a lot of people who want to get into real estate and they think their biggest hurdle is money. And I certainly thought the same thing when I first even had any ideas. Or like an entrepreneur, the biggest hurdle is always money, right? But if given that money, all of a sudden, if they were, let's say they thought, oh, geez, if I had $100,000, I could just do all these things. Like that's not the biggest hurdle. If you gave them $100,000, what would they do? If they're doing nothing with zero or $10,000 or very little, they're not going to do anything with $100,000, mm-hmm. right? That's not the hurdle.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the position you were in where it's like, okay, I could get money, but you didn't know what to do with it. You didn't know what you could offer. Therefore, you didn't know what to do.
Right. Yeah. And now I do know what to do with money. But there is still, gosh.
It's a fear of committing to something, committing your future self to something.
Yeah, or disappointing somebody.
Yep.
Who's given you money.
Mm-hmm.
And having that cost you a relationship, I think, is also part of it. And in the things that, you know, I choose to point my attention at, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. And there's a lot of uncertainty in everything right now. So uncertainty is not an excuse, but it kind of gets me hung up in analysis about, gosh, this is a huge transition. And even if there's like failure ahead, I need to do it. And I need to do it now. Like this is just the time to do it.
Yeah.
But it's also like happening at for what I want to do, the most uncertain time in history. So it's interesting.
But that could also be possibly the most lucrative, best time to do it too.
It is. And it just
right?
means.
Do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. If everyone's retreating, then advance.
Right. Right. And just it means finding the right way to do it, finding the right support for it, and, you know, putting 110% into it. So there is some negative self-talk about that. And that is like building off of like all of the lessons learned from what I've done for the last 12 years. But yeah, it's a lot to think about. It weighs heavy.
Do you feel like how much do you feel comfort with what you've been doing plays into your hesitance, fear of the next thing, doing it?
Yeah, this is the discomfort zone. This is where growth happens, right?
That's what we say, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we say, but is that what we do?
I think so.
But are you consistently staying outside of your comfort zone? And obviously this big transition is pushing you beyond that for sure, but that may seem and feel like a bigger thing than it really needs to be, because if you professionally were going outside your comfort zone on a consistent basis, then these bigger leaps wouldn't be that that intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a good point, because I do feel like there is complacence with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, I can kind of just do whatever I want, which seems like what you'd want. But I kind of feel like I'm jumping the gun on doing that. I feel like that's something that you have to earn more than I've earned. And I feel like there's still hard work that I have to do.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like there's still, you know, yes. I would say that as far as work is concerned, it is become too comfortable in existence. So
I feel like I would be in worse shape if I were in your shoes.
What do you mean?
Meaning if I had a feeling of complacence and comfort, I would drive myself insane in a bad way.
It's
like, the negative self-talk would be far more significant than whatever your degree of it is, I think.
Well, I mean, it's satisfying what I do. Like, there's far worse ways, I think, to be complacent, but it is more complacent than I want to be right now, especially considering what I would like to achieve for myself and, like, the vision and the purpose that I've tried to pursue all this time. I just feel like this thing has run its course and it needs to change. And maybe that should have happened a couple of years ago, but it's happening now.
Here we are now.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the first big step down a road of discomfort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where this is the one hurdle you get over, and then you're constantly taking on new discomforts and growing and shifting and changing, and you never have that feeling of complacency again. You have more feelings of ambition and drive, possibly. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. But is that somewhere you even want to be?
Yeah, absolutely. And I look for those things in, like, my personal life, my physical life, my romantic life. Like, I don't want... I understand that complacency is bad, right? Or bad. It's unhelpful, you know? So, like, I avoid it in all these areas, but yeah, there is something, I like the security of just, like, I'm doing this and it works and it's satisfying and it's purposeful, but it's not enough. It's not enough.
See, I've been having these thoughts lately. I don't think I suffer from complacency. I think I always feel like I'm struggling to do more and do better or achieve something else. And that's a feeling of inadequacy that's driving that. But if I, like, just over the past couple of days, I kind of stepped back and I looked at a few things and I went, all right, it seems like I'm achieving certain things here. And when I had to step back and think about it that way, that's when I went, I don't deserve this. I haven't really achieved this, have I? Like, this looks pretty good objectively, kind of stepping out for a second and looking at the results. Everything looks pretty good. How the fuck did I do that? And that started me down a negative thought process of self-doubt, and it felt like everything was a house of cards and it could all collapse. And then those thoughts drove me back into go mode and let's forget about what the results are and just keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that doesn't seem that healthy, but it seems helpful.
I do wonder how much that mindset might be helpful to you, Brett, and maybe to me a bit too, because I think I might not have a right read on you, but I think I do, Brett. And Andrew, you just explained yourself. I feel like I've lived both these worlds in that, like, I've had times in my life where I am doing stuff, things are happening, but it feels like this chaotic mess and it doesn't feel like there's a clear upward
trajectory. It feels like you're not
trajectory.
Making any progress. Yeah. You're just running around.
But then there's just some moment where, like, you take that breath, you inhale that cigarette and you're looking out over the field of what you've accomplished. It's like, Jesus, yeah, I didn't have two houses 5 years ago and now I do. And it didn't feel like there was some...
I have four houses, Alex.
Yeah. I didn't have two houses.
Not including the one
or four houses either. On the flip side, I feel like, you put so much time and effort into making really high quality stuff with School Sucks that maybe your instinct is to, like, have almost like a purity of, like, experience or what's in your field of view, where you just really concentrate kind of on one, maybe a couple of things, and you just do those things until they're done. And then there's, like, gap space where, I don't know, you're doing something that's not, like, a productive heading towards the next thing. And I feel like for me, it's in those gaps where it's like, okay, I really want to focus and get this thing done. When that thing gets done, if I don't have some level of, like, yeah, and there's this 20 other things I need to do too, it's very easy for that gap to turn into, like, taking a step back, leaning into complacency. And then that can turn into being bored and, like, God damn it, I haven't done anything I feel like is an accomplishment today or this week.
Is this possible? So if I think about, you know, my houses, for example, and not focusing on going after more. And I go, well, the smart thing to do would be to perfect this one before moving on to this next one. That sounds like the smart thing to do, right? get all of this wrapped up and perfect and finished, and then move on. Well, I will just make the wrapping up and the perfecting that one
way too
last
long.
Forever,
yeah.
And I'll never grow.
It's always going to be something to fix.
So is it possible that maybe, I don't know if this correlates properly, but if you look at the last 12 years and everything you've created in school sucks, trying to protect that and make it perfect is taking away from what might be better and more lucrative in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where my thinking is at right now.
Okay, because I could see that stopping me if I went, well, I'm not perfect on this, this, and this, so who the fuck am I to go on and try to double the size of the portfolio mm-hmm. overnight?
No, it's at this point, it's like assets and liabilities. And what are the assets to kind of amplify and move forward with, and what are the liabilities to let go? You know, I've not done a good job of leveraging my time, right? So CJ and I were talking about Tim Pool. Tim Pool throws up a fucking headline and rants about it for half an hour.
Yeah.
You're seeing his work in real time.
Yeah.
Right? If I put out something that's 90 minutes, you don't see the 12 hours of work that went into that. And there's almost like this... I don't know how to describe it, but it's a negative emotion that it's like that time just seems lost to the world, right?
The back end time that doesn't get
I know that's not like CJ and I were talking about this morning too, like having, you know, being in good shape, being healthy, like people implicitly understand it's the result of a lot of work that is unseen by most people.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, it's just like it didn't produce what I needed to produce for the time I'm investing in it. So it's kind of like this question of like, how can I leverage that time better, right? How can I do more with less time-wise?
And that's where we've talked about outsourcing that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that's a fear that you're going to have to get over at some point. We've talked about this, I think, on this show. We've talked about this on mastermind calls. But outsourcing that time suck, that's not a high leverage use of your time, even though you're the best person for the job. There's higher ways to leverage yourself.
Yeah.
And as scary as it might be to outsource that, and as much time as it might take and money that it takes up front, if I could go back and redo everything, the biggest mistakes I made, no matter what it is, was trying to save a few bucks early on.
Mm-hmm.
And not put those systems in place or not outsource those jobs and tasks and put it on myself because I'm going to be slower at it or it's not going to be done right the first time because I saved some money. So, you know, sure, maybe you doing that type of work, that post-processing work, it'll be done perfectly and done right the first time, but the time invested is the issue.
So here's the trick. What if that's the thing that I love to do? But all the problems that come with all the realities that come with that,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, yes, has this sustained me? Sure. But the market has spoken on what people prefer.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe someday after I'm dead and gone, that will be there on the internet or whatever it is, and it will be appreciated or it will be, you know, I don't know, circulated on cassette tapes. But in this time, I need to take the things that I do well and apply them in a different way. So
I'm really good at mowing lawns and I kind of enjoy it.
Exactly.
But I'm at a point where I'm paying a lot of money to other people to do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is, I feel like this was...
And I do a better job than they do.
This is on your show at some point. Ikigai?
Huh?
Ikigai?
Ikigai?
Yeah. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's like, I don't know, some Japanese or African concept or something where it's like, it's a Venn diagram of like what you're good at, what you like doing, what the world needs.
Yeah.
And finding that sweet spot.
Yeah. And that's like the fucking shitty thing is that what does the world need?
Yeah. That's the trick.
But the problem is the connector isn't there. Right. I could go on the podcast every day and be like, we fucking warned you. We put out all this stuff that like we explained all this.
Yeah.
We've been doing it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And accepting that is like when it's your work, when it's your like sweat that's gone into that, accepting that and not being like resentful of that. It's a trick. But I mean, it's the only option because you can't wallow, you know?
It doesn't matter that, like you said,
like the world doesn't want it.
Yeah.
So, like, do a few thousand people want it? That's great. And is that enough for the funding model that exists? No, not at this point.
I think at this discomfortable pause, it'd be a good time to take a break.
Oh, a break. This is a real discomfort zone.
And then we come back and try to make some kind of resolution here.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, things don't feel incredibly unresolved in that, like, it's okay that there's uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly accepting of that.
And nobody's more for uncertainty than me.
Yeah.
Or at least plowing ahead into it.
Well, the plow is purpose, right? So I've got a plow, if you will. And it's just a matter of, like, figuring out how to direct it.
Hmm.
So I'm contemplative, but certainly not worried.
Curious, Brett, we meandered through a conversation knowing generally school sucks anniversary, end of school sucks is in our minds somewhere, but you mentioned you're not particularly discomfortable about the general premise of the transition of it all because you accept that that's going to bring some more instability into your life, but there's reasons why you're inviting that in vis-a-vis complacency and financial goals that aren't seemingly going to be met by school sucks anymore. Is there something that does feel uncomfortable to you about all this stuff?
Sure. Like, this is a thing that's kind of defined me, you know, in many ways. And now it's going to end. And that's a lot to contemplate.
I don't know how many things, you know, used to define you that don't any longer.
That were about this long?
Yeah.
Being a C student lasted about this length of time. Being a discipline problem.
Being an adult in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's that, but there's like with everything about that, that's like, oh, geez, wow. It's like, wow, that's exciting. It's kind of like, this is something new with the foundation of, you know, the greatest friends, a community that I built. Around, I think a big part of it is shared ideas or at least a shared curiosity about ideas, but also appreciation for school sucks. That grew out of this. That can still continue to grow. Great friendships. The most amazing relationship, romantic relationship I could ever ask for.
But none of those things are going away.
None of those things are going away. So it's like with all of this. So it's not like starting from scratch at all. You know, and yes.
But think about the change from New Hampshire to Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm.
So overall, was that a negative?
No, it was wonderful.
Right. And think about how exciting and great all those things are. I think all of it can kind of be similar.
No, I totally agree.
Really, when is change ever bad? Personally.
When we don't embrace it.
Sure. Yeah. Or when you resist it or you focus on protecting what is as opposed to.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm, you know, in here, I'm the person doing the change.
Yep.
Like, it's intentional.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's all planned out.
Yeah.
Kind of a long time coming.
Like, yes.
How would it have played out if, you know, someone said, Brett, follow me, and they walked you up on stage, and they said, school sucks is over.
Mm-hmm. It just all of a sudden this happened?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be on a stage?
I don't know.
What kind of public shaming is this?
Because it's just like the discomfort.
That's the discomfort.
It's just like, you know, going up on a stage and doing a speech on a cruise ship.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. By the way, on that ship, just as I was getting to the good part of this overly planned speech, announcements start happening on the ship saying, we're coming into port. Yeah. Here they come.
We're coming into port, folks. We're pulling into Port St. Lucie.
Well, I think what I'm laying out is like, okay, with whatever the venture is, there could be unseen threats, right? Where a switch could get flipped and everything could stop.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're doing could just have its legs chopped off.
Right. So then there is this, there's this interesting juncture right here where it's like, I can stop doing School Sucks and not do anything if I don't want to for a few months, right? But I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
September is a transition month, and then I want to hit the ground running with something new in October.
I wonder, I guess this is sort of related to transition month. I wonder if you feel like there's some discomfort around how School Sucks is ending. My personal like story on this from recent times.
I feel like we're projecting discomfort on the bread.
We might
really
be.
Have.
That's why I'm asking the question.
No, I'm ready to receive it. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of thoughts. There are a lot of emotions about this. And I've really tried to like sort through all of these things and even like the bigger picture that these things fit inside of. So I'm open to anything. Go for it.
Yeah. So my question is and here's why I'm doing this, Andrew, is because the initial you would have just thought, well, something's ending and that's scary. He said he's not really discomforted with. So now let's try to dig deeper.
Dig!
Ask some different questions.
All right.
Yes.
Do you feel like
I'll be the discomfort projector?
Yeah, there you go. Well, I'm projecting some too. So like when I left my apartment that I'd lived in for like 6 years, and that's like the second longest I've lived anywhere in my life. I made all these like little videos. Like I went back to my hometown and I made videos of like, here's some piece of junk buried in a closet, but it was my old shoes that I wore doing this thing. Like I made all these videos. I took a bunch of photos to try to do my best to have some sort of like closing of this chapter, recording a moment in time and what this place meant to me. But I definitely like when I left the apartment the last day that I was there, like, I don't know, there wasn't some great set of tears or some big fireworks display or anything. It was just kind of like I wrote off and that's it. So I wonder if you feel like the way you're closing School Sucks, does that feel good to you? Do you feel like there's something more you want out of it? Do you feel like you wish it was over yesterday so you could just be on to the next thing?
And before you answer that, I want to expand a little bit. So what you're laying out is like you're sentimentally closing a chapter.
Yeah, like,
and I don't quite have a good grasp on sentiment.
Hmm.
I can be sad at the loss of something, but, and this could be wrong, but I feel like the absolute healthiest, best thing to do, at least for me, is just not focus on the sentiment and just go next.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, for maybe. Me, it's always more sad where I go, oh, this is the last time I'll ever see this place. Like, that seems like a sad sentiment. If I don't pause and have that thought, then I never have that thought. I'm never sad.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just some stupid trick I play on myself because I'm too dumb to really wrap my mind around it.
I think that's a valid tactic. Maybe it's a trick. Maybe it's valid. I think it's a valid tactic. The thing that I am curious about with you and School Sucks and then with me and moving from Columbus and all that is like what I really would like to understand what closure means. And at a high level, I think it just means like, yeah, a year from now, when you think about School Sucks, like you don't feel like, oh man, I wish I was still doing that. Or, oh man, this thing happened and I wish it didn't. It's like, no, that was a time in my life. It was a very important part of my life thus far. And I'm into the next thing and it's great. Like there's not some sort of sadness or hesitation or some sort of stuckness with the thing. That to me is what closure means. How do you actually generate that? And not have it be this thing that somewhere in there something bothers you about it, but you're just moving at a million miles an hour and ignoring it. And then 12 years from now, you have a big crash and realize you fucked it all up. I don't know what that process is. I'm curious, like, do you feel like you're doing that closure process?
I feel like I'm doing it with myself. I'm not doing a lot of it on the show. This will probably be the most, like, aside from Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest and that talk and that, you know, presentation.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the most ceremonious
thing.
Aspect
yeah.
of this. So, I think like all things, it's where you point your focus. So I could sit in front of my computer screen and be like, God, the world is burning.
Mm-hmm.
And
if only it was 2009 again,
I could, you know, take 200 steps and be outside and be in the sun and then take 200 more steps and be in the woods. And it's just like a total state change. You know what I mean? And I feel like this year I've done a better job than ever of being like present. And like the thing I always wanted, like, you know, I want to enjoy life now. I want to be happy now. And I've thought about that too, like the time preference trade-off that occurs sometimes. And like how much of my behaviors are formed by thought patterns that weren't ideal, you know? Like I've had some health anxiety through my life, some hypochondria, you know? And it's kind of like if you have this pattern of behavior where it's like, well, better make sure the house is clean before I leave in case I die while I'm out. You know, want people to discover a clean, like you have thoughts like that.
Brett Vinat has thoughts.
Brett Vinat has. I'm not accusing you, but like if this is it, you know, if whatever happens, I don't want people to find a messy house. But it's like when you have this experience of like something goes wrong with you and you're like, oh, well, I'm dying. You know, life feels, and I'm not saying like this is me now every time that something goes wrong with me, but I live this way for like a long time. Just with this like kind of background anxiety. And yeah, it's like, well, you better make the most of this moment that you have, kind of thinking that turns into a kind of behaving that turns into a habit pattern. But I do think there's something to be said for like, be present today. And like when I looked at like relationships, whether romantic or personal or professional that went wrong, it meant not being present. Right? It meant not attending to what was happening in that moment. And that was really, you know, when I set out on the show on some kind of personal improvement journey, like that was the first thing. Like, how do you get present? How do you, with tomorrow or the next day, whatever, not promised. So like, how do you make sure that you enjoy today? But how do you not, like, how do you not do that at the expense of the future? Right? So I found a pretty good balance. Like I'm not doing, you know, things that are like catastrophic to my health every day. Like I'm finding things that are actually mostly good for me, I think, to do to make the most out of this day that I have. And I think, you know, my experience with Gabriella this year too has also been like, it is so easy to get so much enjoyment out of like the simplest moments in life, the littlest things. It's shown me like, oh, this is what I was always trying to do with like being present and being grateful. What was the question that you asked? Because I was really leading towards an answer.
The question was about, do you feel like you're doing the closure business?
Okay. So again, like, yeah, to
you seem very at peace with all of it.
Yeah. To like where you point your focus. So do I feel on the one hand, and let's like, do all parts here, all voices that are kind of wanting to be heard in this situation. Is there a part of me that is like some feeling some level of regret? Like, oh, why didn't I work more on email marketing? Or why didn't I network better? Why didn't I try to get this out further? Why didn't I capitalize on this professional relationship more? Why didn't I try to grow this thing? And like the regret of like, I think now this is more relevant than ever, even though it's kind of like, it's not, it's been like the school thing has been crowded out of the public conversation. This was a much more seemingly important issue 10, 12 years ago, right? Where it's kind of like from a libertarian perspective, like this is where all of the obedience and conformity and thoughtlessness is produced in this factory. And I'm going to do something dedicated to calling that out, exposing that. It's just crowded out at this point. The problems that I think most people are facing, even in that circle, are far more urgent. And it's kind of like, I think maybe a lot of people feel like the school thing is just lost. Kids are playing musical instruments in bubbles.
Yeah, it's so, not on fire right now.
Right. As far as like the intellectual self-defense, the media literacy, did we produce a lot of things that people really need right now that they haven't found? Sure. But it is what it is, you know, and it's lessons to learn. And the other place to look is like, it brought hundreds of great people into my life, you know, dozens of people that I'm close to. It gave me the tools to succeed in the most important relationship I've ever had. and the other most important relationship I've ever had, you know, with myself and with a partner. It helped, I mean, to varying degrees, helped thousands of people. Like, that's
what
all
more
good.
Can
like,
you, yeah, what more can you say?
But there's room for regret. Maybe it's not regret. There's room for reflection. It's like, I could have done that better. But I feel like I still have a chance to do that better.
Yeah. Carrying it to the next thing.
Yeah.
Let's get negative.
Okay.
Projecting discomfort. So what about threats that are out of your control? Something that, like I said earlier, could just take something out. And I'm projecting this because I'm thinking, okay, what if, you know, one of my places gets shut down? I'm mm-hmm. not allowed to use it as a short-term rental,
mm-hmm.
right? I know what I'll do at that point, but I don't know that everyone can think that way and know what they're going to do,
mm-hmm.
right? So my biggest defense against that is to keep going. Keep hitting the next button and have more. That way, if one thing is taken out, it's not everything,
mm-hmm.
right? So diversifying to a degree, I'm still within a niche, but if one house gets shut down, it's not the end of the world. I just have to sell that house.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I do. And I would just take that time, those resources, that money, and put it somewhere else. If my day job went away, that would be very significant, but I could dedicate that time and energy into something else. And I know that I'll figure it out. I don't know what the exact answer is. Just like, I don't know what the next property would be if I lost one, but I know I'll figure that out. So with you, you know, if something comes and attacks you and just knocks you on your ass, what then?
Well,
is it just plow forward with confidence?
No, I think again, it has to be a balance of the two where it's like, it would be pretty paralyzing to just, you know, be like, well, tomorrow's the day I could get canceled. Because that was kind of like my attitude towards health throughout my 20s,
right. Yeah.
You know, and yeah. Some of my 30s, which is like, well, I might die.
Right. And that's, you know? Just all that is a continual excuse to not do anything.
Right.
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 And I think it could, in your position, you could very easily go down that road. And I know, like, in certain talks and conversations, you start down that path a little bit.
Sure.
But you don't go the whole way down.
Yeah. And I think it's okay to poke your head down that path too, right?
Sure.
Instead of like denying that path exists for you.
Right. Like, you have to acknowledge there is a threat, but part of it is you have to have some kind of blind faith that you'll be able to adapt.
Right. So the diversification that I've tried to do, we have these different ways, these different mechanisms through for the show to get funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
I realized...
But are they all subject to the same type of threat?
Yes. Now they are more than ever.
Right.
So that means, number one, you have to find new ones. But number two, the real adjustment that I made maybe like two years ago was, you have to make some money not from this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to all kinds of ways of doing that. I thought about taking a few months off and getting a job.
One thing that's kind of along these lines.
So wait, well, what, real helpful. Quick. Here's the thing. What I don't want to do is to get out of a routine of working,
mm-hmm.
which I could do. And the month of August,
yeah.
One of the reasons why I kind of wanted to pack a lot of things into August as a challenge is it's usually a very like slow month for me. Like,
yeah.
There are months of August in the past where I just haven't done anything. I mm-hmm. took the whole month off.
Yeah.
I'm 2017. Was an example. Did that event where I met you.
Yeah.
It's 4 years ago today.
Wow.
How about that?
It was right around here. Yep.
Yep. And kind of just didn't do anything for the rest of the month. And then same thing happened. Something similar happened the next year.
Does that feel good afterwards?
No, sometimes it feels necessary, but it never feels good. And
yeah.
I didn't want... So, but that's the thing. Like, I didn't want to do that. This month. This is it. This is the end
yeah.
of School Sucks. Now, next month is September. So
that could be the lazy month.
I've got Mindset and Mastery with Nathan, 9/11, 9/12. A controlled demolition of your self-limiting beliefs. And that also could, yes, that will be the first month without the School Sucks podcast of my life since I was 31 years old.
Hmm.
So...
Well, getting back to my question, besides taking on a 2-month job or assignment.
Well, oh, that's where I was getting to. Like, my income came from things outside of School Sucks. Like, I have clients that I do production work for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I've got that process pretty damn streamlined. And, you know, it's like if all of the things related to School Sucks, like funding-wise, disappeared overnight, I could still pay at least most of my bills.
Yeah.
And that's pretty fantastic. And then just the sheer abundance of time that's afforded to you overnight and your network and just the thought power behind your network, I think a whole bunch of doors would open up. And you might find that in that worst case scenario, that could be the greatest change ever for you. In some forms.
What, getting canceled?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
it's going to happen.
Yeah. So I would just plow ahead and do your best to not worry about it.
I think let's just assume for the sake of the conversation we've had for the last 5 minutes, Andrew's problem that he's projected onto you is something that you actually feel. The helpful things, if I was you being the best Brett Vinat that I would want you to be, and then me. Because I'm living you in your life. I think pressing forward, knowing that cancellation is on the table and that's the risk that begets the reward of the satisfaction and the hopefully love of your new and growing adoring crowds. Definitely highly recommend adopting what the one of my favorite podcasts, No Agenda Show, calls the value for value model. Like, the more that you can be listener directly supported, not relying on advertisers, not reliant on a Patreon and like super chats and stuff like that, I'm sure it'll be in the mix. But like having a crowd that can just, I don't know, PayPal, obviously there's threats to PayPal, but like just directly send you $5, send you $500, send you $5,000, incorporating that somehow into your show. The more that you're just funded by the people who enjoy what you do, the less cancelable you are. One, because you're not going to have somebody else who can tell you, hey, you can't do this because I'm paying you. And two, like if you have that crowd and then you also do the second thing, which is like whether it's Discord and or email list or something else, somehow develop a way to reach these people so that if one of those given platforms goes down, you still have a relationship with them and a connection to them communications wise. Like I think that's all you can really do if you're going to say anything that's important and anywhere near the line of the Overton window.
Right. Yeah.
And then the last thing that I would say too, that imaginary perfect Brett, at least from young Alex's perspective, would do in the next few months is like, I think maybe you're calling it October, like October, I would say put out at least a piece a week or maybe more if that feels right to you, just to like work out some kinks. And then like November, like hit hard reaching out to all those contacts, all those people in your network to get the, whatever it is, the guests you appear on, someone like do some level of like working out your kinks, but relatively quickly start doing the promotion thing again. Cause I think you've got so much like abundance of resource there that, as I think we talked about this a while ago, you haven't tapped into for a while as far as School Sucks goes.
Like, I'm standing on a mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that is something that for me, I'm feeling like excited for you with this new thing that you're kind of reinvigorated and reinvested in producing. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of awesome things that come out from you having this new thing and then having the energy to go out and do those like working with other people things to promote it. Don't wait too long for the show to really work out the kinks before you start doing that. Cause I think you're going to see a lot of shit gets figured out fulfillment wise, maybe income wise, by just tweaking it a little bit and then getting the word out, getting this new content in front of as many people as possible.
Right. So all I can say about what's next is at some point in the past, I pitched the idea to Tom Woods on his show.
Mm-hmm.
And I never received so many emails in like a 5-day period saying, how can I help you do that? That's one clue. Second clue is these people, this genre is a much bigger problem now than it was 4 years ago or five mm-hmm. years ago or whenever that was that I was on the Tom Woods show talking about it. And I think it allows me to speak again to a younger audience while also attracting an older audience. So, I mean, I'm being very, very vague. I put a lot of thought into this, but I'm going to talk about it in more detail at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
Nice.
So. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I think I'm glad you're feeling good with the ending of School Sucks as it stands before us. Because I think a couple of like metaphorical things came to mind throughout the conversation, which is the best one is probably from 12 years ago when I was starting to listen to School Sucks. I also was very much more into like conspiracy theories and like aliens and mystical stuff. I think all that's fun now, but I haven't been as invested. But back in those days, I had a book about the magic of Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, and it's got all these little symbols and all these little planes of existence and magical formulas and incantations and motions and all this fun stuff, one of which is this concept of the abyss. If you want to get from the lower levels of the Tree of Life, of kind of living a more animal, physical existence, up into the higher planes, the God realms, you have to cross something called the abyss. And this is a point where you take all the tools, all the weapons, all the accoutrement that you've gathered to help you build yourself up to this point where you're ready to cross into the divine new realm. You have to let all that stuff go and just take what you've learned, what you've internalized, what you've become through that process, and carry it forward into the next thing. And I think you spoke to this earlier, like a lot of the trappings of School Sucks, when that podcast ends, starts to fall away, and there's a chaos and there's an unknown to that. But I think you're bringing a lot of skill and knowledge and wisdom and people who care about you and support you and are excited for your next thing with you into that abyss. So I think you're going to come out on the other side and it's going to be like, wow, look at this whole new world that we've discovered on the other side of all this discomfort.
The abyss. The abyss. People need to stay tuned to the feed that they're subscribed to.
Hmm.
There will be no more episodes after August, but there will be updates, little sprinklings, little Brett,
little tastes,
crumbs of where to go next and what to expect. Alex, thank you so much for being a part of this thing for all this time and for, you know, becoming such a good friend when you were just a kid one time listening. Mm-hmm. I want to do a roundtable at Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest of gherkins.
At least two of us.
You, Danny McCarthy.
That's
right. Have you met him?
Danny McCarthy, yeah.
Yes, you know him. Yes, I'm in a picture with you two. Nick Hazelton.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if any other youngsters pop up.
You could call it Let's Make a Dill.
But I love the story. I love the story of, like, you were the guy I was looking for out there.
Yeah.
You know, when you were a kid. You were a teen. Yeah, I was looking for teens, I guess. Now you're an adult. And mm-hmm. we're really good friends.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And that's like one example. And of course, Andrew, you've been, very...
I'm just standing there. You've been,
No, you've been really supportive. And I think like this show that we've done together since like, what, 2018 now, has been some of the most like honest and uncomfortable explorations that I've ever recorded. So... I appreciate you certainly creating this idea, and that we've stuck with it, you know, all this time through some trials and tribulations for sure. And of course, Portman Show, getting to be a part of that, it's like, that's the best work I've ever done.
Cool. So. No, I'm happy to be a part of it. And it's nice to, you know, not have to feel like I have to perform. Not that I perform ever. But like on the discomfort zone, I don't feel like I need to make anything funny.
It is kind of uncomfortable to think about some of the things that we've put out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got nothing else to say, except I do have some ideas as to what I could discuss at the next Discomfort Zone Live.
Okay, which would be?
I'll get into it then.
Oh. Well, aren't we going to try and help other people?
Yeah, but I'm assuming they're... going to be times when no one is bringing anything up. So I have this as a backup.
Definitely have your filler content ready. I can be a ringer for you, but
there's only so far that can go if we want to inspire others to also
come
up.
Or we just threaten them and we just say, we're just going to sit here and stare at you until you come up and talk.
We get them all in a line.
That's not going to work, though.
Mm. We make them all line up.
Oh.
Here's something, because you talked about having just a bunch of silence to increase the tension in the room. The last thing that I remember had a bunch of silence that was very uncomfortable was a couple of years ago. We went to this thing called the Hump Film Festival. Andrew.
There's so many things that you do that I really just don't like the idea that it's a thing.
Be so discomfortable. Actually, we should schedule next time one of those things happens, the Hump Film Festival 2022, maybe.
I've worked very hard to cultivate a lifestyle where I do what I want. What I want is a myriad of things, constantly, every day, shifting. But even though I'm doing all those things and they don't seem enjoyable in the time, they all work towards something. Mm-hmm. Something like what you're describing, I don't even know what it is, but I know I don't want to do it. Just like I don't know what different sushi rolls are, but I know I don't want to have them.
Yeah. This is it presents itself as art, but the reality is there are naked people on screen engaging in various sexual acts in a room filled with a bunch of other people who are also watching this happen with you.
We've done this on the show years ago.
Did you really? Watch porn?
Yeah.
But
it's been done.
I mean, this was pretty classy for the most part, except there was this one in the middle of this Hump Film Festival. There's all sorts of styles. There's animations. There's different ideas. There's different levels of like, this is high art and this is just Randy nonsense. And then the sound cuts off and a green and black night vision camera comes on. And over the next 5 minutes, it's just complete silence other than groans and moans in this theater as this gentleman proceeds to pull an to apart and show it on camera.
Sure, Alex.
You know, my next question, which you just answered, was like, how graphic is it?
It's as graphic as you can get.
I don't know if I can use this in the show, if I'm going to put this out as a podcast, though.
I'm going to tell you something my dad told me when I was growing up. When I was a boy, I found myself saying when I was a boy a lot lately, and I really like it. Like, it just comes out naturally, and I go, oh, yeah, I guess.
As a boy?
Yeah, I'm old. When I was a boy. When I was a boy, my dad told me something. When I thought something was funny, he made sure to suck out all the joy out of that thought. And whatever I was getting joy out of, he made sure that I was not gathering joy out of it anymore. One way he did that, it has stuck with me for decades now, and I'm going to pass this on to you, is he told me, Andrew, there is no joke, no idea, no thing that you can get enjoyment out of that I didn't do before you. And I thought, oh, bullshit. You didn't have Nintendo back in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have this. You didn't have that. I thought all these things. I went, no, the world I'm living in, old man, is new and great. Everything's new.
Yeah.
No, it's not. The older I get, the more I realize there's nothing new. Nothing you can describe to me that's new. There is not some parallel for it exists in the past. And it's been done.
Yeah.
Everything's been done. Nothing is new. And I think we're all better off if we just avoid the new things.
Yeah.
Because they're just shittier versions of the old things.
Okay. You think speculums were invented to entertain millennials?
Right. Exactly.
Mm-mm.
Do you think graphic things were invented to just gross out the old guy?
I'm not exactly sure what point you're making.
I don't know either.
I think that if you really want to crank up the discomfort and encourage people to say something, you just threaten them with playing this video in silence unless they come up and talk.
Well, we could just introduce them to our friend Dale.
Oh, is this how it works? Is like people have to get up and talk?
I thought that was the whole point of the discomfort zone live.
Oh, so we play the Hump Festival?
You play just very graphic, uncomfortable, in silence pornography. And you say, look.
After we lock everybody in the room.
Yes. Oh, there's no leaving. There's enough crew here that we can just keep people herded in. And you say, here's the deal. That's going to be uncomfortable one way or another. Do we want it to be uncomfortable and productive in the form of you, the audience, coming up and talking to us? Or do we just want it to be uncomfortable as we all sit in silence and look inside of
I feel like Stanley Kubrick did a version of this in the 70s.
With the eye things?
Mm-hmm.
Clockwork?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. A clockwork zone.
Mm.
Discomfort work. Clock comfort zone.
Oh, if I had to wait it. Rewind time.
Well,
we should probably cut that whole last bit out because I think we had a really nice, sweet ending, and then
yeah, probably
Andrew decided he wanted to keep going.
Mm. Yeah, maybe the people watching us live will be the only ones who get to enjoy all that.
Yeah, we're still live. We talked about anal speculums, and that's cleared to go.
Shit, but now I got to cut that part too. I was trying to make a new start point. I can bleep stuff. So thank you guys for taking time out of your day to do this. And of course, thank you for everything you've both done all this time.
Hmm.
And thank you for listening, everybody.
I could die in a fiery race car accident before the next time you hear from me.
I think this is the last time we'll probably all be in this room recording.
Likely, yeah.
Let's really like sit with that for a minute.
I can't. I got to go. Next. T-shirt idea.
Okay.
Really cheesy, but it's just text of different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, those like music videos that just show text of different sizes as it flashes across the screen for the lyrics.
Yes.
Kind of like that, but on a t-shirt. And it's just a black shirt with white lettering. It says, this is where the growth happens, except for the T, and this is an arrow pointing down. Like, here is where the growth happens, but it's also a penis joke.
Hmm.
The arrow is a penis?
No, it's just pointing down.
A penis is arrow-like.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Penis
so it
is
points...
rocket ship-like. Yeah. Well, I feel like it should point kind of towards your heart, too. That way you can play the game.
Sure.
Of like,
yeah.
Because this is where the growth happened. Well, but then you also have your gut, too. So it's like, this is where the growth happens.
Gut is the second
confusing.
Brain.
Yeah.
Gut is the second brain.
Yep.
But what an uncomfortable thing to be looking at watching a show.
How quickly can we get these shirts printed?
Probably within a day.
Hmm. It'll be expensive.
Well,
we can do it. I actually know. I've got a system.
So now that we've clarified expectations for this performance, everyone knows what to expect.
Mm.
Let's move on to our weekly since last discomfort zone dick punchings.
Alex, you first.
Wow. The thing that comes to mind is the first thing that I will say, which is I got moved out of my apartment that I've lived in for 6 years.
Mm.
And
what does that mean? I got moved out.
I moved out.
Okay.
I got moved out. The move out was assisted.
Like the police took you out?
I got moved out by my labor and the labor of other people.
Okay, because the way you phrased it, it sounded like you got evicted.
No, it was not a coy way of saying I got evicted. I told them I would not pay them anymore, and they said, cool, that fits the statutes of our agreement. And it wasn't super stressful. I kind of waited until like a weekish before to really start getting rid of stuff. But by the time it was time to call the friends in and move the heavy shit into people's cars and transport it, there wasn't anything left to pack. There wasn't a whole lot of like,
I've been in this place. You had like 9 things.
Yeah. I didn't have a lot and I sold some of it and I gave some of the rest of it away. So yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not like a multi-room house that had to all get done, mm-hmm. but I've been involved in enough moving scenarios to know that like it can go downhill fast if you show up the day everyone's supposed to help you move and like you still got to put shit in boxes. Like
that is an outrage.
Yeah.
That is an outrage.
It's not okay.
Everything should be boxed in the shape of the truck that the stuff is going into.
Yep.
That's how you move.
Yeah. It's just not fair. Like no one else can make those decisions of what goes into what box and how is it wrapped and what's it put together with. Like that's gotta be on you, the stuff owner. So that all came together pretty beautifully. It took us just a handful of hours to get all the stuff out and run it over to a friend's basement. So that feels like a pretty solid win because moving can be very stressful.
I helped Andrew move once, and I'm not entering Andrew as an example of something that outrages me because it's perfectly understandable. I will preface it with that. We have all helped each other move. I will help everyone move who are, you know, Andrew, James, will always be there to help them move. I remember, where were we? Keene, New Hampshire. We were loading this big truck. And then it was like, okay, there's just one more thing. This garage. And in this garage, there's engines and parts. And yeah, that was a hoot. But we did it again when you guys moved from New Hampshire to here in a big truck. And then they moved on Christmas in the snow.
Mm-hmm. I've moved several times since then.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
You guys moved into here.
Yep. Yeah. I know how to move now. And I understand what you're saying, Alex, and what you're saying about the boxes.
Boxes in the shape of the truck that you're going into.
Yeah. I get that. But what I found is, while that might save some time, if there's a lot of shit, you just do it and don't stop till it's done. And no matter how much shit there is, you get it done in one day.
Including the packing and boxes?
Yeah. Like, just throw it all
in
the truck.
Jesus.
Like, just get a bunch of bins, throw it all in. Don't worry about packing. Don't worry about boxing and taping and all that. Bins. Bins don't require unfolding and taping.
Yeah.
And placing. And if it's super fragile and valuable, then leave it behind and get in your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, too. I didn't want to deal with a bunch of plastic bins because we're moving into a spot that is bigger than where I was living. But it's not like a, cool, I have 40 bins that I just moved halfway across the country. Let me just stack them in the closet. It's not that big. So the paper box route was the most sensible.
Moving is a great time to get rid of shit, mm-hmm. I say.
I remembered that story of Puke moving out of his house.
That was the
down
worst.
South. And I remembered explicitly the, why didn't you get rid of this when you packed it up? And I did that. So nothing got packed up that I'm planning on getting rid of as soon as I unpack it.
Well, that's great. And then your cross-country move should be relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretending to be a minimalist right now. Well, I've hidden all my belongings in a storage unit 600 miles away.
Yeah.
I think I am the closest thing to a minimalist because I have not stayed in the same place for more than like 3 consecutive nights and I don't know how long.
Mm.
And I somehow get by, yet all of my things are scattered across like 7 different properties.
That's too much.
But because they're so scattered, there's no one place I go and I go, this is too much shit. Like, I can go into the garage here and I go, that's a lot of stuff, but it's not all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go to the storage unit and I go, that's a lot of stuff. But most of it's pukes. Then I go to the other house and I look at that and I go, most of that's garbage. And then I move on. And so there's no one location that has an overabundance of things.
Yeah. As long as you don't ever move from Western Pennsylvania ever again.
Well, if I do, I'm just going to go with whatever fits in my bags and abandon everything here. And it's like, okay, if I ever come back, I have all that stuff.
Assuming somebody doesn't homestead it.
Right. And if they
do, what's this car doing in this garage?
Yeah.
It seems unclaimed.
Yeah.
Next in alphabetical order for weekly dick punches.
It's Brett.
That's Andrew.
Okay. Alex was present for this. The weekly dick punch, there's not one big thing. It's basically, Alex, can you explain what today was like?
Mm.
Summarize it as much as you can.
I'm curious to see where you're going with this, but it's essentially, this is the way I would put it. We'll see how you react.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's errand running. You might even call it moving and shaking. If you want
like
to get
better.
If you want to, moving and shaking. If
makes
you want
me think
get,
I'm like dancing on the phone as I walk up the sidewalk carrying things.
Yeah, and there's just music in the background and a lot of snapping. But yeah, it's like we went and did like a bunch of different kind of errands things, dropping Puke off to get his car and going to Termin to put a lock on and pull a bunch of stuff out of there that needed to go to another house, and then going to that other house and dropping that stuff off and setting some of it up and talking to contractors. Then I think we went to the bank, stopped at a couple of gas stations here in the course of those hours, and then a lot of phone calls. So it's kind of just like this on the road, go here, do these two things, talk to some people, go there while you're going there, talk to some other people. When you get there, do a couple other things, and then moving around, moving and shaking.
So you're making it seem like a bunch of little tasks, but realistically, what was happening is I was juggling an insane number of balls.
Yeah.
And those balls range from tiny little like BBs
mm-hmm.
to giant like medicine balls. So there's a lot going on. So yeah, like taking puke to pick up a rental car, not a big deal, not a very like significant thing, right? I was handling a birthday present situation as well throughout the day. Also not a very significant thing. On the flip side, I was also coordinating an offer on the most expensive piece of property I've ever put an offer on.
Yeah.
Coordinating that. So talking to the listing agent, talking to the business partner, talking to the lenders, talking to the mortgage broker, talking to contractors, going to the bank and getting a deposit. Like all of these very, very big balls in addition to all the little ones. And I just took them as they came and flew through it. There was not like more than 4 minutes where I could put the phone down, either responding to a text, an email, coordinating some things with my accountant, giving her login access to things, and talking to my assistant and just doing all these things. And it was this constant in motion, moving a million miles an hour. And I don't think there was any one thing that ended up becoming a failure. And every curveball that was thrown my way just kind of absorbed in, adapt, continue. And I still made it into this studio at the time that I expected to make it in here. Oh, and on top of that, I bought a bunch of racing safety gear last minute because I'm going to New Hampshire when this show's over to go car racing. And I was able to buy all this stuff. And in spite of logistical headaches and supply chain issues, it will be delivered to the place it needs to be delivered to by tomorrow afternoon. And I will have some fresh new racing safety equipment so I don't have to borrow somebody's stinky head sock
or sweaty helmet. Gross. And that's where I think moving and shaking comes in, because like you can look at the surface level of it and see a lot of errands and a couple of phone calls, but then you can realize like the thing, I don't know, the August lock stands out to me as a thing that's in this weird middle ground for what you do.
Where it just stops me and I have to wait.
It stops and you have to wait, but it's also like, it's just one of these things that on the one hand, you would want to feel like this is something somebody else should do. On the other hand, like, it's access to a property that you're like responsible for. So mm-hmm. like, who would you delegate something like that to? If you get to a certain organizational side, then you have like, whatever, a chief operator guy who is like your right-hand man, and you trust him to be able to get into any building that you own. But you're not there yet. And so it's like, well, you can't just have some random lawnmower guy come in and install this, because now he can get into your house. That's not okay.
Right. And what this proves to me too, or it helps prove this theory I have, if I had planned everything out today, how well would that have gone?
That one August lock would have thrown the whole schedule.
Exactly. That one little problem would have ruined the entire day.
You had to talk to a human being. The whole point of this is to have our computer overlords
right.
run everything.
So instead, what I did is I went, okay, here's like the three places I physically have to be, and that's it. Whatever I can jam into there, I jam into there, and whatever problems occur, I just deal with them as they come, mm-hmm. and maybe that limits the amount of time I have to face these other issues, but I didn't plan out, you know, exactly 19 minutes for this phone call
yeah,
or anything like
much.
That. Like, that's impossible.
Stressful.
Was the birthday present for me?
No.
Oh!
Jesus.
Who's it for?
Somebody else, and he told me not to do birthday presents for you.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
Is it somebody I know?
Yeah.
Who has a birthday around now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Today, in
today,
fact.
In fact.
Joel?
No. No.
Happy person. Birthday to Joel, by the way, who's
oh, wow.
also a very important person in
Joel
the history
Bine.
Of School Sucks. Yeah. Who's been a regular podcast guest and a Discomfort Zone guest.
Ooh, can
guest,
I
yeah.
tell a fun story about that?
And
world?
I talked to him last night for a couple hours,
did
actually.
You?
A little bit about aliens and how they might be in the ocean.
Wow. That's
sorry.
Where I would be
go
if
on.
I was an alien.
Well, I mean, yeah. It well, depends if you're waiting to reveal yourself for the right moment.
There's a lot of depths. There are depths in the ocean that you can hide in. A fun little yearbook story. This is a little backgrounder that he might not have gotten otherwise. We get this yearbook together. We have submission deadline. We figure out we can extend that submission deadline. We're sending Facebook messages, emails, phone calls, smoke signals, trying to get the word out about filling out this yearbook. And we get to the point, and in the last couple of days, our deadline was like Sunday to fill it out. And then Gretchen had like 24 hours on Monday to try to get it done. And then that bled into Tuesday. In all of this, like Sunday, I believe, Carrie's like, oh, I wish Andrew would have told me he couldn't reach out to Joel Bine, because I know that Joel Bine isn't on social media anymore. So then I emailed him and I got an autoresponder
Carrie,
saying he's
on vacation. Carrie, I couldn't reach out to Joel Bine.
Yeah. Well, we figured that out.
Oh.
So she sends an email and then she gets an autoresponder. Hey, I'm on vacation. I'm not checking my email. And so Carrie's like, that really sucks because I know Joel's going to be really upset that he didn't get his message added to the yearbook. Somehow, behind the scenes, some mechanism, some alchemy that I wasn't aware of, somehow Joel Biden is reached and his message is received. So we're like, oof, thank
this
goodness.
Must have just happened because I talked to him yesterday and he said, well, when you have the yearbook, I'll sign it.
Wow.
So I can have people sign.
There were messages in our little yearbook thread at like midnight last night. So they were working hard. I was doing what I could. But the trick with this was like, cool, we secured Joel Biden's message. However, the way that physical printing of paper documents works, we have exactly an even number of pages and we have all of the submissions perfectly laid out so that every page is filled with submissions, including the last page that I believe ends with Zach's layback. So if we add one more, not only are we going to have one page that has one user submission on it, but that actually adds four pages to the physical copy because of the way printing works.
Put it on the binding. Joel binding of the... Man, we're giving a lot of information about this guy away. What his email habits are, what his social media
habits
are.
He's on vacation right now.
He's on vacation right now.
So go
find
his house.
Yesterday.
Yeah. But fortunately, we didn't have to do some sort of graphic design travesty like that because, and combing through the submissions, wondering, is there a person, is there a name that we can just say, hey, we got your submission. Fuck you. Joel Biden's taking your place. But who wants to be that heartless to somebody who took the time to fill
this out? I can be. I will be.
Andrew would have done it, but... I'm sure I couldn't
pick out at least four names that should easily not be on.
He could have, but the thing is the problem got solved before you got involved.
Yeah, I know.
In that we did get one submission that seemed suspicious from a Mr. Mike Hunt, and all it said was thanks. And so we thought, you know what? Of all the names in the world, of all the messages that could have been sent, this one seems the most like a joke.
It seems more deserving than some of the people that you mentioned.
Yeah. So there are some other names that have since been illuminated to me as people who probably could have gotten cut, but then they would have known because they took the time out.
Oh, well.
Whoever Mr. Mike Hunt is, he's going to look at his yearbook and he's going to see that his name isn't in there, and that's unfortunate for him, but he should have not had a joke name.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really just trying to graciously receive this.
That sounds
amazing...
very yearbooky, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What?
Mike Hunt. Name like that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It does. Well, if Mike Hunt shows up to Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, he can just sign it.
Well, okay, maybe I don't know much about yearbooks, but I feel like the very limited experience I have with yearbooks, it was just a bunch of like stupid jokes. Like in all the signature
things. Is that it?
Things? Yeah.
Well, that's if you even get one, yeah.
Right. But I wasn't in the yearbooks for the most part, at least in my later years. Mm-hmm. But the earlier years, it was just like anyone who signed wrote a stupid little joke.
On the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not what's printed in the physical copy. That's
I never even looked at that part.
Yeah. So this is the part where we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
That had Mike Hunt in it.
Okay.
Mike Hunt can make a joke in person.
So on to my punching. I've been talking a lot on my show recently about outreach for the sake of self-defense, as it's kind of coming to that, I think, with people in our own lives and like, how are we going to talk about the things that we need to talk about in a way people feel very pitted against each other right now. So I had to have a couple of crucial conversations about the shot, and they all went very well. And that's all I'm going to say. Well, one yesterday with my dad, and I kind of laid out the case, and he's like, I understand.
With your shot?
The shot that we're being compelled to get.
Oh.
So that's it. That's a nice and short one.
Are you being compelled?
It's moving that way. Yeah. I don't want to get too into this, but New York has now become the model, and they're basically saying these are all things. They call it the key to New York. You can't do all these things unless you get the shot.
Yeah.
So look for that to spread.
I might go there on Sunday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Do I need a key?
I don't know how fast they're going to be able to implement that. So you should be okay. But, yeah, all these things move very fast. It's kind of like saying some decades nothing happens and then some weeks decades happen.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But anyway, I just want to... you know, when you kind of look at the world and you see these things that are out of your control, the desire is to, what can I put in my control? And how can I feel efficacious in the midst of all this? Well, I feel like I should be marginally aware of what's happening. Like, what is the way that I can be purposeful in that situation? So to me, and the advice that I've given to people in the audience is like, you know, you have to be able to communicate clearly and inspire curiosity and stop trying to, you know, convince people of things. Just plant seeds of doubt at this point. So I felt like I did that. I felt like it went very well. I felt like I was practicing what I preached and putting it into action. So that's good. Makes me feel like, you know, when you're talking to thousands of people and you're kind of being advicey, you want to make sure you're doing things that work. So I felt like that was confirmation of a good strategy.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
But, and great times were had after those conversations. So that was actually really good.
So I've attempted these types of things, but I can't help but get just angry.
What do you mean?
Because I get such ignorant pushback.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, but I think it's important to,
but I would imagine the people you're talking to have some level of intelligence.
Yeah, but I think most people do.
Not my grandmother.
Okay.
Not my grandfather.
Okay. Well, he's asleep.
Yeah, he can barely communicate.
Right.
But I don't know. There's no getting through, and I've gotten to a point where it's sad, but I cannot have a conversation with my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Because while I am doing a million things, and I could talk about any of it, there is no interest from her beyond, well, you got to be careful because of whatever the thing I have to be careful about, which leads down a road of an argument.
With your grandmother?
Yeah.
Well, it's an example of a thing you have to be careful of. Driving?
I've traveled more in the past 18 months than I ever have in my entire life.
Yeah.
And traveling is forbidden. According to her,
What?
Yeah.
People think traveling is forbidden?
She thinks it is.
When you're 87 years old, it feels like it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, so
you can't just say, Grandma, I have a pass.